Nils.
Timon, let's talk about conversational agents.
Favorite topic.
If you look at current devices, we might believe that this is all new. This is, we never heard of that. We look at Amazon's Echo and these things. Well, actually, that goes quite far back, even in computer science, right? So we look at things in computer science. It goes back to defining the Turing test, which is basically an interaction with a conversational agent and making this so believable that you cannot distinguish between this conversational agent and a human being anymore. And
is that the Turing machine?
No, that's the Turing machine. We're talking about the Turing test, right? So Alan Turing contributed to different domains, including artificial intelligence.
Uh-huh. That was the 50s, I think. Yeah.
That was in the 50s, yeah. I mean, even like if we continue that, I think there was Eliza, something like a chatbot that would actually, I mean, it wasn't meant seriously or more often as an example, right? I think that but one.
The 60s?
That was in the 60s, I think. Weizenbaum?
Yeah, Joseph Weizenbaum. Mm-hmm. And what did that guy, what did that do?
I mean, you could chat with it through a text chat. And it was a very simple rule-based system, but even that simple rule-based system convinced some people that there's a human being behind that. So people thought this is kind of intelligent, even though it was, it clearly wasn't. Right? There's a simple set of rules and then that's it. But that was sufficient to convince some people that there's more behind it than this simple rule set.
Was it the one that had this psychotherapist mode?
Yeah.
Okay, the Rogerian psychotherapist or something.
I think if you go to the Android App Store, you can find similar systems, which don't do much more, but they pretend to have some kind of conscious and help you to get over certain things.
So they just listen to you and then they rephrase it and parrot it back at you.
Yeah,
and that makes them appear as if they understand what you're saying.
The 60s, I think there was also the time when like this became popular in science fiction. Movies like Colossus or HAL from A Space Odyssey. I mean, they're clearly some kind of, they're smart, they can talk with people, and not in a good way. Maybe we should think about that. So in fiction, at least, these things are typically not nice to human beings or to humanity.
Are you talking about the AI behind it or the actual interface that was just a bit of offensive?
I think the interfaces, they were very polite, but the AI behind it, that wasn't really polite, like launching nukes at other people and stuff like that. One thing I find interesting is if you look at specific companies doing this, and my favorite example is Microsoft. I'm not sure if you probably remember Clippy, right?
Yeah.
The small thing that appears on your desk, and that is kind of a conversation agent. I mean, it doesn't talk, but it responds to you. But Microsoft had others. There was Bob, which came even earlier, which was terrible. Clippy was also terrible. Not sure if you remember Mrs. Dewey. There was the interface for a search engine. I'm not sure if that was intended, like that was serious, but they hired an actor and then they had the search engine. And on the search engine was Mrs. Dewey. And she responded to you and she talked with you. And that was also really terrible. It was a bit funny, but it was not usable at all. And currently they have Cortana, and I think Cortana like continues this line of terrible things. I think it's not very helpful. I'm not sure if people actually like it. I'm not sure if anyone likes it.
From a functional point of view, or do you just have a beef here with the voice or the language that Cortana uses?
I think it's the functional point of view. I think my problem overall with all these devices is not the speech recognition, not the voice that they use, but the like the logic behind it, the mm-hmm. the natural language processing that goes on in the background.
Okay. And are you bashing Microsoft for a specific reason, or does this apply to conversational agents that you see in general?
I think Microsoft's ones is maybe even worse than the one by Google or the one by Amazon. But I think they're all bad. So I'm not sure if there's so much of a difference between them. I didn't
hater here. You're a bit of a bot hater here.
Yeah, I only two days ago I tested Google Assistant. So I had one, but that was the first time I actually set it up at home, and I expected this must be better than Amazon system, but it's actually not. It's even worse. I really don't like it. It talks even more. It can do even less, and it's like, why, right? So. Yeah, I find it super surprising. If you look at all these devices that are out there and how much they are deployed, I don't know. I think Amazon sold 200 million smart speakers by now or more, and they come on all mobile devices. So they're literally billion out there. Like every single mobile phone that you buy today has Siri or Google Assistant.
Question is how many of those are in active usage, right? I think Amazon really flooded the market with these incredibly cheap devices. You know, this Echo Dot was, I think, $30, $40. It's kind of like this approach to just, you know, get them out there and then figure out how to actually provide value to people through a killer app. And I think we're still looking for the ultimate, you know, usage for them.
We did studies with them, but I think we compared them to traditional graphical user interfaces. And I think that was unfair because graphical user interfaces like clearly outperformed these, like we compared an Alexa device for Spotify with using Spotify on your notebook. And on your notebook was clearly much, much better in every way. I think that was unfair because I cannot use, I don't know, the graphical user interface while I'm cooking. At least that's not very easy. But I can do that with the voice user interface. So I think there are use cases or situations where you don't want to use the graphical user interface. So the conversational interface has a lot of advantages for certain situations. I think the car is another classical example where these devices are actually pretty, I mean, they're not good, but then that's the only opportunity that you have. So it's, and then that makes it the best one.
Should we just clarify real quick the difference between conversational agent, chatbot? We talked about voice interfaces already. How do they all come together?
I think the definitions are not clear. I mean, I make up my own definition. I would say a conversational agent is something that subsumes all of these things. So you have a chatbot, you have something like an Echo Dot with an Alexa on it. And I would say this is on one level the same type of device, and I would both call conversational agent. But one is speech-based, so one has a speech-based interface and the other has a text-based interface.
And from a processing point of view, probably all of them are text processing, right? Because the speech, really what it does, it runs on natural language that is expressed in text. That's really where the lines blur a lot, right? Because you talked about graphical user interface, and in a sense, Eliza was a graphical interface as well, right? It was a text-based chatbot that you could type to. It wouldn't understand a natural language yet, or spoken language yet. But I think what we've seen in the 90s then, especially with speech recognition picking up, is this transition from text-based interfaces to voice-based interfaces. And that's the ones that made it now also into our homes and onto our tables. So I have a Echo Spot here. And it does have a UI as well and a camera, which is really creepy because it literally stares into your living room. But it can display complementary information while it talks to you.
Do you like that?
I liked it for about 6 weeks, I would say. And then I just ran out of maybe creativity or creative uses for it. As the applications for it are quite limited, right? So I don't have any smart objects to pair it with, such as lights or my door bell. And so most of it was music control, but then the speaker was really crappy, and so it doesn't really replace a hi-fi stereo. And then, you know, for the weather, for timers, or for just general information requests, it just gets old quite quickly, I found.
So I have now, I think, four of them deployed in my flat. So for one for every room. And I have more, so I could deploy even more. And I think the best thing is playing music, because then you can say, like, play music everywhere, and then it plays music everywhere. And I think for the size, the sound quality is quite good. And I don't own a proper sound output device anyway, so it's the best one at my home. It beats my computer, so it's pretty good for me. But then I think that's not an issue with the conversational agent, but it's an issue with Amazon trying to personalize what they play. And that, like, the selection of music I get, that's really, really terrible. I don't like it at all.
So with all these devices, did you deploy them before lockdown or during lockdown? Is there some kind of compensation for social interaction going on? Or is this how you live your life with lots of tech in your house?
So we did studies with them, and now I don't use them for studies. So now I have 20 devices at home that are not used. So then I deployed them. And I only got internet for lockdown. Beforehand, I had no proper internet at home, so I couldn't use them anyway. So that's why, I mean, I deployed them because I got internet, and then that was the main reason. I think the other thing, like playing back music, I think that's pretty good, but that's a very clearly defined task, right? And I think it's a good internet radio, but it has little to do with the conversational agent part, I guess. As you said, timers, that's something that's very helpful, but we know that from Siri. I think Siri was mainly used for appointments, like creating calendar events. And then I don't know, I think that's almost it.
It's very restricted. I think it was Frank Bentley and his team at Yahoo who published a paper last year at Inwood, and they basically, what they did is they asked people to upload their Alexa history. So they gave you $4 or $5, and then you would go there and just download your all the commands that you issued in the last 3 months, and then you could upload that, and they analyzed that. That's quite interesting how limited this is. Just gonna share my screen real quick just to show you this. Here you see the most popular usage for it, right? So music we had as well, then information requests, any type of automation, small talk in general, alarm, weather, video, interesting, time, and then very little other stuff. And so that's very restricted, right? If you think about the things we do on our phones or our laptops or our pads, iPads, yeah, tablets. Why is that? Why is there such a small range of functionalities for these devices?
I think, like, if you like the current generation of devices compared to what we could do previously, so before they came out, I think the only thing that really improved dramatically was speech recognition and speech output. So these parts, they improved dramatically, and computers now can transcribe what we say pretty well. And these devices have nice microphone, or like they have an array of microphones. They can do this speech recognition part very well. They can also have the speech output part very well. But then between these two things, between these two layers, there has to be some understanding or turning text that you say into some kind of actions. And I think that's one of the fundamental problems that we have at the moment, that we don't know how to do that. So there's of course there's support for developers how to do that, but it's basically these things are still hard coded. We have to hard code them until if this something like that is said by a person, then do this kind of action. And you don't have to specify the individual words in a like you can have word categories and things like that. But you still have to hard code them. And I think that's one of the problems from a developer's point of view, why this is so restrictive. And I think there are other restrictions, things like that they cannot approach you. Also and for good reasons, right? For good reasons. But a colleague did something with students and they wanted to build something where the device approaches the user. And then they had to build a strange workaround where the user had a phone and then the phone would say, Alexa, do this, like start the skill. And then the device would respond to the phone and then could approach the user. And I think that's a clear limitation that they cannot approach us. I would assume in most situations we don't want that. But that limits what we can do with that.
It's funny that you say that. One of my PhD students, Jing, she's actually working on making those speakers proactive. And she uses a Raspberry Pi that triggers a audio output of her own voice on little speakers which we attach to the device. So basically it's whispering into Alexa's ear, "Hey Alexa." And then Alexa opens the skill that she programmed in order to, for example, trigger experience sampling probes. So then the device asks you, "Hey, is this a good time to talk to you? Are you with people?" And then so basically what we're trying to do is we're trying to define contexts in which these devices might want to interact with us, or when it's good to interact with us, and when you're not to do so. I agree. It's a tricky business, right? Especially when it's. I'm sure you've heard these creepy stories of Alexa starting to laugh in the middle of the night, or kind of just out of the blue. Pop up the questions, "Excuse me," you know, in the way she kind of like asks to rephrase a certain question that has never been asked. And that can be really creepy because for some reason, we cannot shut our ears. So basically an intrusion that comes via the audio channel is always much more pronounced than a notification that I can just ignore in my pocket. So I think we're just beginning to explore this interaction modality and the problems or challenges that come with that, right? Also, if you think about the privacy implications, that I can look at my screen, but in secrecy, even then, although there might be people around, but I cannot talk to Alexa in a secret language, maybe when there are like friends at my house. Right, so I probably don't want to discuss like health issues with Alexa in a semi-public setting.
I think for Alexa, it's even worse that you cannot restrict who is allowed to interact with it. So you come to my flat and you don't have full control, but you can control everything I can control by speech. And I think that's also different from, right? So for a graphic user interface, I mean, it's your personal device. You don't give me your phone, right? Or if you give me your phone, then you want me to interact with it. But I think that's solvable, like at least this part. I mean, Google recognizes your voice, or they try to distinguish between you and someone else, which they are supposed to use for personalization. But yeah, I find it super interesting, like how can these devices approach us? We thought about using eye tracking for that. So that's like you have different stages. First, the device might light up, and then if you look at it, then it would approach you. Inspired by how you probably would do that for humans. So if I meet you, I make sure that you look at me before I start talking, something like that. Why don't you build your own device? Why did you like piggyback on Alexa instead of building your own system?
Simply because it scales up in terms of they're easy to off the shelf. They're cheap, and a lot of people already have them in their homes. So we wanted to capitalize on that. Distribution of the devices already, and I think even though right now it's restricted, at some point if you present a concept that makes sense to equip these devices with proactive elements, Amazon has it quite easy to roll this feature out, right? If it wants to, and obviously there should be then a fail safe or like kind of like an override the user. Would be able to kind of say, I don't want at any time to be approached by this device, right? So maybe, especially when you think about elderly care, you might want to have apps or skills on there that actually can interact with the user without being triggered actively.
And I mean, there's all in current devices, I think they all have that is you can say, oh, follow-ups are okay. I think you can configure that in Amazon's devices and Google's device as well. And I think other devices have that as well, so that you talk with it and then it talks back to you and then you can continue the conversation. And that could be something like that, right? So approach me proactively. And I mean, Alexa does it in a way that sometimes it beeps out of nowhere when I get a message. That's really the implementation is nice, but I think it's obviously connected to my Amazon account. So if I order something on Amazon, then the device or the devices in my home, they play some kind of sound if the package will arrive today or something like that. And that's why is this thing doing it? I think some more smartness in this domain would be highly appreciated, I think, because I don't understand it. And
almost like your device is excited because it might get a little brother, maybe another 25th device for the for your house. coming back to this, why do conversational agents fail us in a sense? Which I think has a lot to do why there is so little functionality right now for them, right? So we're still looking for the killer app, in a sense. And you said, kind of language has progressed in the synthesis of language, but then also you mentioned how do these devices parse out the intent of the user, right? So the moment that the user approaches the device, not only does the device need to kind of make sense of your utterance, like what you're speaking, the actual words, but also why are you speaking to it? So that's kind of like the second link, right? That can break in a sense where, okay, I understood the words that you are uttering, but I might not have understood why you're actually talking to me, right? Because these devices lack the context to connect, for example, even if it's as simple as time of day, to the actual approach of that the user is taking. And I think, when we think about our notion of usability and a lot of these usability guides, like error prevention, but also making the system transparent, right? How do you make something transparent that has no visual interface or has very little hints as to how do you explore the functional range of this device? So everything, there's a lot of hidden functionality in these devices that we need to figure out how to uncover that, how to make it visible or perceivable to users. Here's what you can do.
That makes me wonder if they're flawed on a conceptual level, because what you have is these devices is something, it reminds me more of the command line. So you're on a like graphical command line, you sit in front of it, and now you tell someone, go. And what do you do? If you're not trained for interacting with a command line, you have no idea like what kind of functionalities are out there. I don't know. What can I do with this? What do I want to do with this? All these things are not available, and then you have to learn, and then you become very efficient with the command line interface. Okay. A graphical user interface, at least the ones we use today, have a lot of benefits because they show you the functions that are available. So that makes things much easier because then you don't have to remember what's out there, but you only have to recognize these functions. And my impression is that these interfaces, conversational agents, or however we call them, they take this step back, and then we are now at the level of command line interfaces again. With mm-hmm. the difference that it's not as efficient. So like command line interfaces can be super fast with them if you're trained. Right. But with something like Alexa, you never become super fast because you still have to speak with them.
And then you lose the context. It's like a command interface that after each command goes back to your parent directory.
Yeah, and I think that's one of like Amazon, they invest quite some effort, it seems, into telling you what kind of functions it can do, and it should suggest what you might want to do with it. And I think that's all part of making it more like discoverability easier, so making things more discoverable. And I think that's super important, but I'm not sure if that's possible on a level that makes it actually usable. But yeah, as you mm-hmm. mentioned, I think it's what I find also very helpful to go through these classical design guidelines or heuristics or however you call them, and one by one and look at them and what does that mean in this context.
Are people, or have you seen examples where people try to develop new guidelines? Is this what we need, or can we adjust the old ones?
There are people developing new guidelines, and I think they are heavily inspired by the old ones, or they at least look similar. Things like, as you mentioned, like things like show status. What's the system status? And we had that. Flexibility, adaptability. And I think like that's easy to translate. So obviously the device shouldn't understand only one variation of a command, but many variations of a command. Consistency, I think that's also like, if I can access a functionality using certain words or certain phrases, I should be able to use the same phrases for similar functionalities. And I think you can go on, and sometimes they're super hard. I think you mentioned preventing errors. How do we prevent errors? I mean, and I think for that one, so that's probably helpful where design guidelines that are specific for conversation agents become helpful when they tell you what you should do about it. I think the current state for preventing errors is you cannot really do that, but at least help people to understand why is this, what's going on in this device. So maybe that also translates to transparency. So it's better to respond at all. So giving any response is better than just saying, oh, I didn't get you, or boom.
I've also seen a paper, I think it was Inwood as well, where error correction came in. So we correct our language constantly, right, when we talk to other people. And so the paper was something along the line, scratch that called. And the notion was, Alexa, book me a flight to Solomon Islands. I scratch that, actually, to Sydney, right? So the current Alexa would not be able to understand that, because you're saying, okay, I want to book a flight, you know, to a destination. So it would extract these entities. Okay, well, booking a flight, fine, that's the action. And then two would be the destination. So then Alexa needs to figure out where's my starting airport, probably. But the moment I break it down in the middle of it and all I say is scratch that to Sydney, it has two location entities and probably doesn't know what to do with them and how to connect them. And so there's lots of work to be done in terms of how to make these devices understand when we stumble over our own words and try to correct for that. And repetitions and, yeah, as you said, synonyms. It's language is a mess.
But what's easy is if you just have an open dialogue without any function, so there's no intent behind it on the machine's end of things, you just want to build something that is able to talk with a human being, just as the Turing test, right? You want to build a machine and the machine should be able to talk with people. I think that what you can do with that is that you can do end-to-end training. So you can use machine learning and you can just train that. And that seems easier than having actually these dialogues that should be turned into actions at one point. So that's also, I think that, yeah, I believe there's some gap for developers how to bring these things into the systems. And I think what you mentioned, that these are examples for, and I think it's also problematic that we use these commercial devices, but they're basically still closed systems. So you can develop skills for that, but you cannot take full control over them. But as researchers or designers to test these things or to explore new ground, we should be able to do whatever we want, to explore the field widely and not restrict us to what these commercial devices allow us to do. And a lot of these things that we do, I mean, they're probably not very good ideas, but I mean, they have to be explored.
Are you calling for an open source custom device that's in the make here?
Yeah, I think that would be very helpful to go on in this direction. And there are many, many individual components.
What's the difference between just, you know, gluing an Arduino together with a microphone and a loudspeaker?
Yeah, that you have to come up with a hardware design. So one microphone is not enough. You need multiple microphones. You probably need the right microphones. And Arduino is not enough because then you at least have to recognize your wake word properly. And yeah, and I think then it goes on and on. You don't have the speech recognition because the best speech recognition systems are from companies, and you can use them. You can buy them, or you can do that in the cloud and still pay for it. And then the natural language processing part, that's also the best systems that I'm aware of, come from companies like Amazon. So I think it's not easy to build these devices. And then the cost, I mean, that's just ridiculous, as you said. Like, I bought 20 Amazon Echo Dots for, I don't know, 25 euros each, I think. Mm-hmm. It was like nothing. Yeah. Yeah, but I think, yeah, an open device would be very helpful for the whole community.
Why is it that Alexa is called Alexa on that and not Alex? I feel, even, and this started probably with GPS voices, there is a bit of a bias there in terms of giving these devices female attributes. Is there a reason behind that?
Like, looking at these navigation systems, I think in the beginning they were male, actually. And then at least they turned out to become female ones. And I think there are good reasons for that. We even did studies on that. And I think people prefer having female voices on, like, on average and things like that, or female gendered voices. So yeah, there are reasons for that. And I think it's highly problematic, or it could be highly problematic. At least there are lots of people that believe that this is problematic, that you basically have this device, it's clearly female gendered. Not all of them are, but most of them are. Like, Amazon Alexa is clearly female gendered. Cortana is clearly female gendered. I think Google Assistant comes by default with a female voice. So they all tend to be female gendered. And then lots of people wonder, what's the effect of these things? So on one hand, what people do is they anthropomorphize things like computers. So I know how humans behave, and then I'll interact with computers, and I expect I transfer some of the knowledge from interacting with people to the interaction with computers. So people shout at their computers, people shout at their cars, which doesn't make any sense. But suddenly it makes sense, right? Shouting at an Alexa, a lot of people do that. Mm-hmm. And I think the fear is that there's this flip side. So we transfer things that we learned when we interact with Alexa back to the interaction with computers. And if that is the case, and that's most probably the case, then the question is that also biased? Like, Alexa is female, or clearly female gendered. Now she's talking to me. Alexa, stop. Yeah. So the device or the agent behind it, that's female gendered, but it's also not very competent. So we talked about that. So it's not very competent, it's female gendered, and it's also submissive. So there's research that shows like, oh, how does this language work? And then it shows, yeah, she is really a submissive persona. And then if you think about what does it make? Like, if I then interact with this Alexa device a lot, what happens if I then meet a female being? Do I expect her to act in the same way? Do I also believe that then all females are incompetent and submissive? Do I amplify these roles? And I think that's true for gender bias, but also on a like for every human being, right? Now there's suddenly a new entity. It pretends to be a human being. It's stupid and it's submissive. And now imagine you're young, right? You're 3 years old, you just learned to speak, and then this is like 30% of all interaction with someone that also speaks is with such a device. Is that, what does it make with us? And there's lots of warnings about that, but there's not much research that actually investigates that. So maybe mm-hmm. that's not an issue, but maybe it is. And I think that's something we should figure out before. We should have figured it out beforehand.
I mean, there are guidelines now coming out, like what the age for a child growing up, from what age you should probably wait, of until when you should wait to hand it a tablet, for example. And is that then the same to have like guidelines to say, okay, maybe these devices do bias or do put bias into our human interaction by pretending to be human, and then should there be then guidelines around interaction itself, or maybe a minimum age, like a parental advisory stamp on them?
I don't know. I think we know too little about it to argue for one or the other. And I think as you phrase it, it's similar to computer games. I remember when I was very young in primary school, probably 8 years old or something, I played these games, which are horrible. I remember one, I was throwing hand grenades at other soldiers and had a machine gun. That's what I played. If I would have kids, I would never allow them to play these games. Back in the days, that wasn't realistic, right? But still, that was the idea. Did it...
Are you talking of Wolfenstein or Doom?
No, it was much, much older, much, much older. It had, I used it on a computer that only had green colors and stuff like that.
So are you saying that if we made Alexa abstract, like let's say a very ridiculous type of voice or in its interaction itself, that could, because obviously you're not completely screwed in your head, you turn it out semi all right, even though having played those games.
Yeah, that's what I want to say. Is it really so bad? And people, there were warnings like for computer games constantly, but it didn't destroy society, right? So I think before we regulate these devices, we should do studies on them and on the effect of people. But yeah, what you say, that makes a lot of sense. On one hand, there's development into gender-neutral voices. I think that could be something positive. That could reduce the gender bias part. But I think it's then still, even if we do that, the question is, do we transfer our interaction experience back to human beings? And that's not gender bias anymore. That's just a general negative effects that could be there, but maybe they're not there. So we don't know.
So yeah. You have a paper on this?
We did first studies on it and related work. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking there is a certain group of people who anticipate the eventual takeover of an AI, and just to make sure that they're on a kind of like friendly path, they make sure that they're already sending emails in very polite ways and never offend a machine in the presence of some kind of data collector. And so I guess maybe it's time, considering that Amazon does record every interaction with Alexa, you know, maybe it's time to think about what happened if actually, you know, AI takes over and gets a hold of these records and then looks at how did you treat your Alexa and judges you based on that. Judgment day will come. Maybe that's what we should be telling our kids rather than having them scream at Alexa.
Oh yeah, be polite to her. She will become our next overlord.
Exactly. There's this movie, 2013, I think it was, Spike Jonze, the producer of Her. Have you heard of that movie?
Yeah, I watched it quite a while ago.
Yeah, it's very entertaining.
Hello, I'm here.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Samantha. What's it like to be alive in that room right now?
I wish I could put my arms around you. I wish I could touch you.
How would you touch me?
So the protagonist, Theodore, he has this operating system in his ear. And I think it's Samantha. And she starts from scratch to kind of like learn about him, his habits, what he does, how he talks. And she assists him throughout his everyday life. And he's a writer. And then over time, their relationship evolves into something very intimate, almost romantic. And he starts, I think, having feelings for her. And that's really interesting, right? To kind of like you have such an intense relationship with your device. I mean, I spend definitely more time with my computer than with my partner. And so the where's the line, you know, where we cross over to actual emotions, and that that movie makes a good point about that. I think it ends a bit tragic where she starts speaking to other AIs and they find a way to live beyond the material realm. And then I think he becomes jealous and he says, are you talking to other people as well? And then she says, yes, I'm actually talking to 1,000 people, but I love 100 of them. So you're one out of 100, yeah? That makes you special. And then eventually they take off into their own cyberspace after reaching some sort of AI enlightenment. It's a very entertaining movie.
Do you think that's the future?
That's AI will evolve beyond us and take off.
Okay, so that's your trends. What are the more short-term trends?
I wish my devices and chatbots were even a tenth of had a tenth of the intelligence that Samantha had in that movie, I guess. But we do, I mean, I just recently built a couple of chatbots. So I guess, you know, the level one conversational agent is really just a reminder function, if you think about that, right? So a notification on your device is kind of a, you know, an agent telling you something, if you do that. And so I think it's the Rasa guys. That's a company in Berlin who created this open source framework to create conversational agents. And they define these five levels of conversational intelligence. And the first one's kind of like these reminder type devices. The second is what we see more and more popping up throughout the web. These frequently asked questions that are turned into an actual conversation. Right, so I can ask, what time is, you know, is your store open, or where do I get this type of insurance? And then the bot kind of like tries to make sense from this one piece of information and comes up with a link or a description on where to find more information to help me. But they're really not that smart yet. And that's where probably the majority of systems are right now. Also, if you think about Alexa, it's really just almost only a one way and then back interaction. Right, and so the third level next off from that would be having contextual awareness, and so basically the context of the conversation that you can develop a conversation into more than just a back and forth, but maybe continue a conversation over, you know, multiple phrases, and also across time. And it kind of like learns like either the context of, you know, I lost my credit card, for example, right? And then it knows, okay, are you asking me to block it, or are you asking me to order you a new one, right? Or are you asking me to find it for you? And so the context matters, right? And these devices, I think that's the next step, to kind of like program them in a way where they learn and they pick up the conversation from where you left it off. And then level four would be more like a personalization of this, or customization, where we see devices actually tabbing into our profiles and customize the experience around it. So then you mentioned earlier, they don't respond yet to different voices, for example, right? So Alexa could learn your specific voice pattern and then automatically feed you information that is only relevant to you, or also put security in place to prevent other people from accessing your Spotify list. So possibly even more infringing material. And also kind of like learning when is a good time to interact with a specific person and through which channel and all these things. And then what I found really interesting is that last stage, where we use these agents, and this is really from the early days of agents, where we have different agents and they do different things for us. So they act on our behalf. And then was it Apple or was it Google who presented this this conversational agent that you could send out and book a hotel room or a flight for you?
That was Google.
Was Google, right? Yeah. And so it's just like said, I want to, you know, I want to fly there. And then she calls the travel agency and does everything for me, right? And so I think where these devices, rather than having these sophisticated interaction with us, I think they're going to eventually also be able to have those interactions for us on our behalf. And so we might have multiple AIs that, you know, one does, you know, all my taxes, the other one does you know, books my social calendar by making reservations in restaurants and getting tickets for concerts or whatever, right? So all the things I think that we might not want to deal with ourselves, we might eventually be able to outsource to more clever entities who have the patience and time and resources to actually do these for us. And I think that's really interesting. What I'm personally right now interested in is the coming back, you know, to your comment about how we perceive them as very human. But then with certain topics, certain things that we discuss with people, we've recently seen that we run into trouble. Because we have preconceived notions about, you know, our ideologies, about our views on things, and it feels like it's getting increasingly harder to discuss certain topics, right? So if you think especially about the U.S. and the polarization that's happening there on topics such as abortion rights, gun laws, and so on, or in Europe, you know, when the Catalan independence flames up, there are lines that go straight through families and friends, and it's really tough to have a generative dialogue with people without him running into emotional issues or offending people, someone, right? And so we're right now trying whether bots can break down this barrier, and whether you can discuss contentious topics or sometimes polarizing topics with bots in different ways than you would do with actual people, and how they could help to bridge the divide that we see in a lot of these very polarized debates. And so we have actually a study right now on MTurk. It's called Biased Bots. And so we bias these bots on either very liberal, very conservative topics, and then have them interact with people in different conversational styles. And so I think they could help us also, you know, refine our own let's say, conversational skills, but also help us in terms of, because what they're information interfaces, right? So they can be effective in terms of like guiding us to the right information, but also I think they can help us reflect on ourselves, on issues, on, you know, news items and so on. And I think that's a huge potential that hasn't been much explored yet. And I'm really excited to see where that goes.
Do you think people are more forgiving to bots? So if I talk with a very conservative bot, or with a very conservative person, is there a difference between them if I interact with them?
People might not care to damage the relationship with a bot, right? But we do care about damaging the relationship with our friends, right? Yeah. Maybe not with a stranger that I'm screaming at across the street, but at least with my partner and friends, you kind of like, you stay within a realm of polite conversation, and that's great. But what it does is sometimes what we've seen is it prevents from having those conversations in the first place. And that's where a bot may come in handy, right? Because if I feel offended by a bot, then the question becomes, do I just like, okay, delete it and get rid of that conversation? Or, and especially when we look at Alexa, a lot of people try to break Alexa, right? They troll it. To a point where it gives a wrong answer and then it's funny, or it grammatically says something completely wrong and then yes, I made it, you know, it kind of like broke the system. And so that's an interesting aspect, I think, where it might be worth looking at. If you offend people, are they going to throw out of the window, or are they going to engage to the point where, okay, how can I crack this thing?
What does it do with people? Let's assume I have this bot, and whenever I don't like the bot, I throw the bot away. And then I get a new one. So whenever the bot has the wrong opinion, and then doesn't it create the expectation? Whenever I talk with a person and the person has the wrong opinion, I just throw the person away. So then you learn this, that you wrong opinions, I can throw them away. And then now you start talking with your family. Mm-hmm. And then someone voices a wrong opinion. Do you throw them then away?
I think the kind of conditioning that you're talking about, that really needs a lot of time and a lot of exposure. And that's also the reason why you're not a psychopath, you know, running around with a rocket launcher on your shoulder, but you're a university professor, even though you've played violent games in your past. And I would expect, you know, kind of like the same distinction. People are intelligent beings, right? And being able to distinguish who are you talking to and what's behind it. I mean, even though they might pass the Turing test, right? And I think there are subtle hints that you can, or design elements in a conversation you can use. So each bots are created with the character in mind. Right, so you can create a bot that is funny or sarcastic. You can create a bot that is more factual, that is more sophisticated. So the choice of language, you know, tells a lot about the bot. And people are really good at distinguishing the different types, also in a conversation with people. And so I would expect they can also safely make the distinction between this is a debating bot and this is a, you know, a person I'm talking to.
I think there was a lot on conversational agents.
Possibly. So how do we build them?
Do you mean like us or?
Yeah, have you seen any tools or frameworks lately that HCI or any researchers can really use to make their own?
The one you mentioned, but then if you really build them from scratch, I mean, you don't want to build them from scratch, but you, like the speech recognition, there are APIs from Google, Amazon, Microsoft. And if you just want to build prototypes, it doesn't cost you anything. I think that's, if you want to like have the inbuilt components under control, I think then speech recognition, speech output, there are commercial or scientific services available that you can use. For the NLP part, I think Google has something, a framework for that.
You mean the Google Dialog Flow, or do you mean the actual speech component?
Yeah. And then Amazon has something similar, but I haven't tested that.
Yeah, Dialog Flow is very easy to use, right? To define utterances and then connect them to intents and then also custom responses. But it's very limited in what you can do with it, because it's kind of like a click and drag type of interface. So for the more sophisticated bots, I've had great experiences with Rasa, which you also can deploy on your own server and run your entire code encapsulated, as well as collect your own data. And they have a bunch of good tools for that.
Then I would say people should go out and build some.
Yeah, go build bots.
Go build bots. That's a great end, I would say. Build bots. Thank you for this nice conversation.
Was that?